Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio as we begin the program, and we will end it thusly as well. Just to remind you, this will be the final version of Viewpoints around the world for 2019. Yes, we're going to do it again in 2020. I can hear the applause in the background.
What was that? Oh, you lucky people!
Or was that groans? I'm trying to figure that out. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us from London, England. And yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule in light of the fact that he is some 5 hours ahead of us. As a matter of fact, Tom, I'm assuming, and we'll be talking here in a few moments about Christmas around the world, but I'm assuming you're going to probably be informing Santa of all the things that he should be giving me this Christmas, since you'll see him 5 hours before I will.
No.
Excuse me?
No.
We need to talk about that a little later on in the program. Before we even get into Christmas, the first question for the day is, what's it like in London and there in the UK?
Well, you know, it's pretty dark and wet and miserable. It starts getting dark here at about now.
Hmm. Really?
About 3:30 in the afternoon.
Wow. And what's the weather like?
It's cold, not freezing, and it's damp. Winters here are very damp, and of course, because we're so far north, they're very dark. So we're on the same latitude as Labrador.
Uh-huh. All right. So, but at the same time, you have, currents that give you relatively mild weather too.
Yes, but with climate change, of course, you're keeping most of that weather for yourself.
I'll tell you what, we deserve it. We're happy to keep it for ourselves. We're very selfish people, as you can well imagine. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Quick question. The weather you're experiencing, is this typical for London?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about several items. And, obviously one item of note is the events in the United States and, of course, the impeachment hearings. And as we are broadcasting this or recording this, pardon me, the hearings, this final decision from the House on the potential impeachment of President Clinton, President Trump are underway. By the way, are you able to watch the proceedings there in the UK as we speak?
Yes, yes, we are, and it's getting big coverage. Now that the election is over here, the focus has shifted back across to what's happening in the in Washington. And so, you know, people are very interested. They're very interested in everyone read his 6-page letter to Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if everyone read it, but a lot of people did. So, you know, everyone is watching with great interest.
Now, a quick question has to do with other news of the past week. And of course, last week we had the IG report, the Inspector General's report of the FBI and the use of the FISA court. And yesterday, the FISA court, the very judges that make up the FISA court, noted that there were a lot of improprieties on the part of the FBI. And I'm wondering, has that story seen much coverage there in the...
No. The focus is on the debate in the House of Representatives and the impeachment process.
Okay. It's not interesting that the UK and other countries there aren't concerned about basically government intrusion into their lives, in light of the fact we've discussed on numerous occasions the intrusions of Google and Facebook and other such entities. I'm surprised that that isn't getting a lot of observation and comment.
I think it gets some, but I think they're just more concerned about the possibility that the President of the United States acted in a criminal manner. I think that just takes priority.
Wow. So you're already describing it as a criminal matter.
No, I said possibility.
Possibility. Well, you know, all right. high crimes and misdemeanors. Of course, we're talking about that in relationship to President
Trump.
Well,
that would be criminal, wouldn't it?
I
don't know.
I don't know. I have
high crime. High crimes. Crime is criminal.
Well, I have a problem with that observation of a phone call being a high crime. But okay, we'll acknowledge that for the moment. Let's talk here then about what is the opinion of the community there in the UK.
The opinion, you know, is, and I'll throw in my own, the opinion is that he did something wrong. He doesn't necessarily know he did it wrong. The opinion is that he will be impeached, but because the Senate and politics become so partisan in America, that he will not be convicted, and that the, as it stands now, the evidence that has been produced would not be enough to find him guilty. But having said that, everyone points out that the reason the evidence, insufficient evidence has been produced is because the White House has blocked all subpoenas to White House staff.
You know, this goes back to the evidence that you were mentioned and the ability to provide that information came as a result. And it's interesting that this has not gotten a lot of coverage. The FBI, the federal agencies involved were at best misleading and probably, one would argue, lying about their ability and information, the ability to and the need for acquiring this information. All of this is really interesting from
our perspective. Well, that would all have to come out in the trial, wouldn't it?
Well, no, it's already come out. And
it would have to be used as part of a defense in a trial. In any criminal trial, in any trial.
Right.
But in particular criminal trial, if the police use illegal means to gather evidence,
right,
then that evidence is dismissed.
Right. And
it's inadmissible.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure that it's an interesting observation you make on that one, Tom. I'm not sure if that would apply in a case of an impeachment, but I'm not sure. That is a question to be asked. All right. Before we move to the break, and I want to talk about the elections there in the UK and other events happening around the world. A question for you on the impact that this is having, if you will, on the opinion of the U.S. and the political system in the United States.
Oh, you know, it depends on who you speak to. You know, most people, as I've said repeatedly, don't like Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
The starting point for probably 85% of the population. But obviously for those Trump.
Wait a second. Hold on. You're telling me that 85% of the population does not like
That's what the polls show. Yeah.
Really?
He's highly unpopular throughout Europe.
Now, okay, we're going to get into this in the other conversation here in a few moments in light of the election just recently conducted there in the UK. So the perception, you say the European polls indicate lack of confidence or a likability.
No, dislike.
Dislike, okay, likability on the president is 80% dislike him. That's a stunning number based on some of the recent elections in the European community and, of course, there in Great Britain. Question then goes to the impact on the future relations with the United States. What do you, regardless of the outcome of the impeachment brouhaha, as I call it here, what impact will this have on the European community's relationship with such people as myself and all of our listeners and the country known as the United States of America? Does this in any way impact the imagery for this country and people such as myself?
Yes, it does,
wow.
Of course, because obviously President Trump was elected not by majority, but by majority of the Electoral College. But he was elected by a core of voters who obviously have considerable political power, and he is a reflection of their beliefs, and the Europeans see him as being anti-European.
Mm-hmm.
They see him as basically well, putting America first at all costs. They see him as a unilateralist. They see him as an isolationist, which is a sort of dangerous combination of unilateralist and isolationist. They see him, most importantly, because to them, the American Constitution, you remember, it has an impact on other parts of the world. Other people have followed its example. They see him as a person who is prepared to ride roughshod over the Constitution for his own personal political gain.
And of course, they didn't see that with the previous administration of Barack Obama.
No.
Okay.
Or any previous administration, really, except possibly George W. Bush. They saw it, you know, basically, they saw previous administrations who would do everything they could within the parameters and the context of the rule of law. Whereas, they see Donald Trump as someone who's prepared to go outside those parameters in order to achieve his ends.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And of course, I'm sure many of the folks listening to this conversation are questioning.
Well, disagree.
That's an understatement. But one of the things.
And I hope they do.
Well, one of the things I will say, and it's been an important issue in the campaigns, of course, and we've got a big debate coming up this Thursday with Democrat candidates. But the campaign, and this is something that definitely appeals to a majority of this country, I would argue a majority, by the way, not just based on electoral votes, and that is America does come first. So your comment there was seen as a real positive remark among many listening to this program. Well, more to come here in just a moment.
Yes, let me just stress this.
Uh-huh.
It America comes first at all costs, I said. Now, I think that the purpose of diplomacy is to seek win-win arrangements.
Okay.
That's the purpose of diplomacy. It's the purpose of government. It's the purpose of, it should be a business.
All right.
And that Donald Trump is seen as a person who seeks win-lose.
No, he just wants to win.
I'm telling you how he's perceived.
All right. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Next, we're going to be talking about an election in the UK. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've been chatting here about the events here in the United States and, of course, the impeachment hearings that are underway in the House. As a matter of fact, as we talk about this, the House is in the process, the U.S. House of Representatives is in the process of debating whether to move forward with the two charges that have been identified for impeaching the president. And at this point, Tom, it does not look like it's going to be an overwhelming vote in favor of it. As a matter of fact, it will be a relatively close vote. Interestingly enough, there are Democrats who are going to vote against it. And in fact, one Democrat is leaving his party over this very issue. And you said earlier that this is perceived in the European community, and particularly there is the UK, with a lot of negativity, particularly the president. Yet, I've got to now focus on the events of the past election. Boris Johnson, who was initially going to win possibly by a very close margin, and in fact had a very large victory. It strikes me, Tom, and I'll let you continue here in a moment, but it strikes me that there's a growing, or if you will, a groundswell support for the very issues and policies that President Trump represents. To you on that one.
I think that would be an oversimplification at best, because a lot of in any election, in fact, I would say in the 2016 election, a great deal of Donald Trump's success was a vote against Hillary Clinton.
Mm.
You know, she just wasn't very popular. And I think the same is true in this election here in the UK, that a lot of Boris Johnson's success could be put down to the fact that Jeremy Corbyn was extremely, and still is, extremely unpopular. And so I think you have to factor that into any analysis of any election result. It's not people who, not only the people who voted for someone, but the people who voted against as well. Now, and I think there was a strong element of that in the British elections.
Well, now,
in this past British election. Certainly we're having the post-mortem now, and all the Labour candidates are coming back and they're saying, when we were on the doorstep, the message we heard the most was, we don't like Jeremy Corbyn.
But what about Brexit? Now, this is every bit of an indication that Brexit not only will be going forward, but there's growing support for the exit from the European Union. At least that's what we're reading here.
The polls show that the country is split 50-50.
Hmm.
Okay? But the election results show something completely different.
Right.
And the reason is because of the way the electoral constituencies are set up and the position that the Labour Party took on it. Most of your Labour strongholds mm-hmm. are in the old working class areas where they used to have lots of factories mm-hmm. and textile mills and things like that. Up north, northeast, northwest, Birmingham, Manchester, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those have historically returned Labour candidates for 100 years.
Okay.
Election after election, they've been solid Labour. Okay? But a lot of those people are in favour of Brexit. And Labour very reluctantly, has tried to toe a middle line between saying we're not in favour of Brexit and trying to keep these Brexiteers in the north, who are their stronghold, happy.
Mm-hmm.
And they failed. They failed miserably. And the result was that these Labour strongholds switched to the Conservatives.
Okay, here's a question. Go ahead. Let me go to a question.
They switched to the Conservatives.
Okay.
But the bulk of the population, in sheer numbers, still lives in the southeast and the southwest, and also a big proportion up in Scotland. Those people still either voted for the Scottish Nationalist Party or the Lib Dems or for Labour.
But, you know,
you still have the country split 50-50 on it, but Boris Johnson has won the argument because he has an 80-seat majority in Parliament.
Okay. Now, several quick questions for you. I'm going to move on to other items, but the issue of the Scottish vote, the Scots vote, and I would also bring up the Lib Dems. In both those instances, I'm wondering, what about first the Scottish independence? What's the future of that?
Yeah, Scottish independence. The First Minister in Scotland is a woman called Nicola Sturgeon,
mm-hmm.
And she has said the result for them, which was an overwhelming victory. I think they got nearly 50 seats out of about 60 in Scotland. Overwhelming victory for them. And over again, they say, we want independence.
Okay.
We want independence. And so she is demanding a second independence referendum. Now, the problem with that is the gift of that referendum, that is the gift of whether or not it goes ahead, is in the hands of the government in London.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Boris Johnson's hands. He's the one who can give the go-ahead. He's the only one who can give the go-ahead.
And is there any chance he
will? He's not going to do it.
Okay, that was next. Now, Lib Dems, and of course, your party, did not do well. Is that an indication?
It did not do well. We got squeezed in the middle like a lot of centrist parties.
Okay, all right.
Even our leader lost her seat.
Okay, so what's the future?
I think one of the main reasons was that the Nigel Farage's Brexit Party basically pulled out of the election at last minute. So they were in danger of splitting the Brexit vote.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they solidified it behind the Conservatives, and the Remain vote or the Leave vote was split between Labour and the Lib Dems.
Okay, I don't want to get too much in the weeds here. Last question for you, Tom, before we go to the break. And Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon on Viewpoints Around the World. What is the fallout on this election with the rest of the European Union? Is there a feeling that the UK is going to be unilaterally leaving and no longer being a participant in the European community?
That's been the feeling for 3 years now. But in fact, there are signs that there's a bit of relief that at last there is a clear direction. Even if it's not the clear direction they want, it's something they can plan for.
Okay, and I guess that would be hold true with many of the businesses there in the UK, which, of course, you've been very concerned about.
Yes and no. It started off right after the election. There was a boost in the pound, but now it's collapsed again because Boris Johnson has said that he wants to basically block Parliament or pass some legislation that stops Parliament from in any way amending his legislation regarding the Brexit.
Okay. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've covered pretty much the news of the day. We're going to move here in just a few moments on the issue of Christmas. We're going to talk about the variety of activities around the world on this Christmas season. Again, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints on the Talk Station.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England. And so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. And I'm looking forward to hearing what he's going to tell Santa Claus, who he will be talking to probably 5 hours before he arrives here, what kind of gifts he's going to suggest for me. I'm thinking of gifts for him as well as our numerous of listeners to the program who listen to him every Wednesday afternoon here at this time. And just to mention, this will be the last conversation we have with Tom Arms for this year. Starting next year, 2020, we're going to be living with him again, maybe. Well, not quite living with him, listening to him. Tom, as always, thank you very much for being with us. I would like to start with, what is Christmas going to be like there in London?
I love Christmas in London because everyone leaves the city. They all go off to the country, to their country houses or to visit relatives in the country. And so there's no traffic.
So
there's no traffic at all.
Am I to understand this would be a good time for us to come to London if we're...
Oh, absolutely. It's a wonderful time of year. You know, you've got the decorations up.
Wow.
You've got Christmas concerts and Christmas carols and all these sort of things. It's a nice place, London. Oxford Street is nicely decorated. Everyone is about to go on holiday. They usually take at least 10 days off at Christmas. And the official holidays are Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, which is called Boxing Day.
And where does that come from?
It's called Boxing Day. The very interpretation is why it's called Boxing Day. But the idea is that traditionally the gentry would wrap up their presents that they didn't want, that they got for Christmas Day and that they didn't like. They put them in new boxes and give them to the servants.
Oh, okay.
It's called Boxing Day.
All right. I've heard the term. I didn't know what the derivation.
That is an official bank holiday. But generally people start taking off from about now until the 3rd or 4th of January.
Now, you said a few moments ago this would be a good time to come to London for a holiday or a vacation or a trip during the holidays. My question, would the services be available, unlike August in Europe?
Yes, they're all available. The stores are all open, except obviously on Christmas Day. Some of the stores are open on Boxing Day.
Okay.
They're not open on New Year's Day. The railway service is not very good.
Okay.
Because people aren't going to work, they do a lot of the repairs to the lines during the Christmas period.
You bring up another issue, and let's talk about that. New Year's Day, what is it like there all this week, all the way through New Year's? Is there plenty to do and activity?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty to do. For one thing, they have an incredible fireworks display on the Thames every New Year's. It started with the Millennium. And it's just carried on getting bigger and better every year. Hmm. And then on New Year's Day, they have a New Year's Day parade marching through central London, which is always fun. In fact, I'm leader of a scout group, and we were invited to participate this year. Unfortunately, we can't quite manage it, but we'll be there next year.
That's Christmas in the UK. Let's go across, well, the sleeve, as it's really called, to France. And my first question, France has been embroiled in strikes, and I know folks that are traveling to France for the holidays. What can they expect first with the strike and the unrest there?
It probably be a bit difficult. The trains are having problems. Some of the flights, about 10% of the flights have been canceled, but it's well worth it. France is an Epicurean delight at Christmas. Now, let me just give you one menu of a friend of mine who's French. He was best man at our wedding. Goose, roast chestnuts, oysters, foie gras, lobster, venison, and cheeses, with, of course, the obvious wine. That is Christmas Eve dinner. Now, most Europeans have their big dinner on Christmas Eve.
Well, that's become sort of standard here as well. The foie gras and the goose are kind of redundant, but okay, we'll accept that. The other aspect, of course, is, are there a lot, considering France has all those cathedrals, as does the UK, are there a lot of church services in those two countries during this season?
Yes. You know, the churches come alive at Christmas. I always think it's interesting. There's one in Malta, not one church, but there's a tradition in Malta, which is a very Catholic country. It's a tiny country. It's only about 500,000, but it's heavily Catholic. And in the churches on Christmas Day, the sermon is delivered by a child. They select someone from a congregation, someone from the congregation, a boy or girl, between the ages of 7 and 10 to deliver the Christmas sermon.
I like that. That's in Malta. Let's talk other countries now. What other country leaps out at you for this holiday?
Well, I think the Netherlands is interesting because it's going through a period of political correctness like everyone else. I don't know if you've heard about Sinterklaas and Black Pete. For many years, the Netherlands was the Spanish Netherlands during the 15th and 16th and early 17th century, the Spanish Netherlands, and it was ruled by the Spanish throne. Because it was ruled by the Spanish throne, they thought all the presents came from Spain. And so on the 6th of December, they have literally a ship arrives from Spain, and there's Sinterklaas standing in the bow, waving all the children as he pulls into the harbor, and he's got his sack of presents, which he hands out, with the help of a man called Black Pete, who is a blackface. The reason is because in the 16th century, Spain had a lock on the slave trade. And so obviously, Sinterklaas would have a black slave, wouldn't he?
Wow.
You see? Well, this is not going over well in 21st century Holland at the moment.
I can imagine it's not.
And this tradition is under strong attack.
So that happens December 6th. Why December 6th?
It's the start of the Christmas season.
Okay.
There is a reason. It's not the start of Advent. It's the start of something else, St. Lucia's Day.
Okay.
Which brings me to St. Lucia, who is in Norway. Now, St. Lucia goes around the household with candles stuck on her hair, all lit up. So she wears a wreath of candles. And the reason is she is the patron saint of light. And she was a Roman girl, who, when the Christians were hiding in the catacombs, would go down into the catacombs and distribute food and presents to these martyrs. And in order to keep her hands free, she put the candles on top of her head.
Okay, St. Lucia. All right. Fascinating stories here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Viewpoints around the world. Christmas around the world. We've got a few minutes to go. What else would you like to point out? Another tradition.
Yeah, bring us up to modern times. Japan. Not known as a great Christian country, but, you know, a lot of countries celebrate Christmas in a secular fashion. Japan, after the war, had a famine of poultry. They were really short of chickens. And about 1960 or something, they discovered KFC. And so KFC, everyone goes now, not everyone, but a large number of Japanese go to KFC for Christmas, who lays on a Christmas feast. A KFC Christmas feast for the Japanese customers, and you have to order up to a month in advance.
Oh, my goodness. All right, that's Japan. Give us another example of interesting Christmas events.
Well, in Portugal, they lay a place at the table for deceased members, mm-hmm. which I think is rather nice. And so they start off each Christmas feast with a toast to those who've gone before, and then they dig in. I rather like that idea. In some European countries, they actually go around to the grave before Christmas dinner. They go and visit the grave to make certain that everyone past and present is included in the feast. In Greenland, they eat whale blubber.
High in protein, I'm sure.
High in protein.
Wow. Whale blubber. That's the only time they do it in Greenland? Is it? That the Christmas tradition?
They have it at other times, but, you know, they fry it up and it's considered a real delicacy. And, you know, there are restrictions on whale hunting these days.
Right.
So it has become a delicacy.
Okay. All right. That's Greenland. Another location before we go to the break.
Well, if we look at Norway, they have what are called Christmas goats.
Hmm.
Yeah, and these, they have these giant straw goats sort of scattered around city centers and things like that. And this goes right back to pagan times. And the thinking is that the god Thor, his chariot was drawn by two goats.
Uh-huh.
And so when Santa Claus came along, it was just a slight leap that in Norway, instead of reindeer,
there would be goats.
His sleigh is drawn by goats.
Okay. You know, let's talk about this for a moment, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Obviously, Christmas has a strong Christian slash religious component to it. Is that something that is continuing in the European community? You used the term secular a little while ago, and I think that's what we are seeing around the world, a more secular approach to Christmas. But what's happening to the Christmas story and, of course, the issue
of Christianity? It's still central.
Is it really?
It's still central to Christmas here. I mean, obviously, sometimes you'll get some communities who say, you know, oh, we shouldn't put up the nativity because, mm-hmm. you know, it's prejudiced against Muslims or Hindus or Jews or something like that. But generally speaking, the Christian message, the nativity message, is very much at the center of the Christmas story. Most people will go to midnight mass.
Uh-huh.
Our family often goes to midnight mass at the Tower of London.
Right. That is a stunning story. I didn't know that, of course, the Tower of London is renowned more as prison slash, that's where a lot of people were put to death.
In fact, I have knelt at the altar rail, on a stone which said, Anne Boleyn knelt here to say her final prayers before she was taken off to have her head chopped off.
Wow. And how well attended is the are the services there, for example, at the London Tower of London? They are. And do you if you want to go, do you have to go early? Can you get what's the deal?
In the case of the Tower of London, you just turn up, but you have to turn up about a half an hour beforehand,
mm-hmm.
because the Tower of London is a military barracks.
Right.
And there are about 100 families living there. And so when you go in, you have to be quiet because you walk past their homes.
Oh.
And they make a point of, you know, respect the people who live here. And of course also the gates are locked.
Right.
And so they have to come out and unlock the gates. And then when you're in, they lock the gates behind you. Any other place, I think you just turn up, you know, and, it's best to turn up probably 20 minutes early if you want to be certain of getting a seat in a pew.
Right. Okay.
Because they will fill up.
All right. Wrapping it up, and then we're going to take a quick break and give you a few moments here to, give us your opinion of Christmas. The fact that Christmas season is, of course, here in the States has a strong religious component. I'm wondering, does it calm the community down in any way? We're wondering if it's going to calm down here in the States as a result of events in Washington, D.C. But is there a sense of calm Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the day after Christmas? Is there a sense of calm there in the European community around Christmas?
Yes, because okay. There's a willingness to be calm. As long as there's a willingness. You know, some people just ignore it, but most people, you know, refer to it as a season of goodwill.
Okay.
And they act accordingly. You know, everyone walks up and down the street either shouting Happy Christmas or Merry Christmas mm-hmm. or Happy New Year, and generally everyone is nice to each other.
That's nice. They're not using the word Happy Holidays as we are now hearing here in the States.
No.
That's, we'll leave it.
You will occasionally get people who send out non-Christian or religious neutral Christmas cards, mm-hmm. but most, you know, it says season's greetings or something right. like that. But I would say most people, again, will send out the something with a Christian message on it.
Interesting. Tom Arms with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world here on the Talk Station. Wrapping things up in just a moment with Tom. Joining us from London, England.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As I have said on several occasions, this is the final interview we will be having with Tom for 2019. 2020 just around the corner. But Tom, just a quick opportunity for you to say something nice about me, or actually wish everybody else in our listening audience a Merry Christmas.
I'll say something nice about everyone. It is a season of goodwill. I thank you, Lockwood, for allowing me to appear on your program. It's been a real, real privilege for 2019. Most people don't know it, but you and I go back a long way, much further than either one of us would like to admit to.
Yeah, I'm not 50 years old. I'm much younger than that. But anyhow.
and thank you also to everyone who listens. I know that a large portion of you don't agree with me, which is fine. If you think I mind, I don't.
I know.
In fact, in a way, I almost revel in it. I hope that I have been able to provide a different perspective from the other side of the Atlantic. And that in providing that perspective, I hope that I have helped you to develop your own, whatever that may be. Because I think the dialogue of free speech is just too important. And it's not so much, in my book, what you think. It's the tools that you have and the way you think and that you use your head and you use the facts that you learn from the world around you. It's been, as I said, a great pleasure talking to Lockwood and having the discussion every week. You've been wonderful. And it's been a great pleasure talking to all your listeners. And I really just want to wish them all a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You know, Tom, I would like to just emote on one quick item you just shared with us a moment ago and the issue of free speech. And I think that, yes, there's a spiritual context to what I'm about to say, but also a very secular context. And that is that you and I, that of course you're an expat, but grew up together in high school together, knew each other for many years, and have reconnected at this opportunity with this interview every Wednesday morning for us and afternoon as people are hearing this. But the other gift, the gift of freedom, and I think that it's important that, yes, we oftentimes disagree, and yes, some of the conversation is uncomfortable, but that discomfort is an indication of the greatest gift that we have, not only our salvation, but a freedom to enjoy our salvation and our freedom to enjoy our livelihoods and our opportunities. And that is a special gift that not only do we get to open just at Christmas time, but I would argue every day in each of our communities there in the United Kingdom, we here in the United States, how fortunate and blessed we are to have such freedom. So, Tom, your observations, your comments, your conflicts with me and I with you are really a joyous sign of that very freedom. So I'll leave that with you and let you close. But thank you very much for your time, as always.
Thank you, Lockwood. And once again, Merry Christmas to all.
And
you all a good night.
Viewpoints around the world here on the Talk Station with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.